Welcome to this next part of the same episode, where we're still on the topic of investing and tax considerations in your SMSF. Previously, we looked at some common types of investments like shares and bonds and fixed interest and cash, and the different types of income that you would be declaring in your SMSF. Now there's more types of investments that I want to take you through. One that has become a very common type of investments and in which more SMSFs have been set up for this type is real property. Now, real property can be either in the form of residential or non-residential, which is commercial property. Non-residential property can also be in the form of business real property. So that's where you're running a business, and perhaps your business owns the premises in which it operates. There's a provision in the SIS regulations that allow a transfer of the business property that's in the name of your business from its owner into your SMSF at market value. So that's one way in which you can bring property into your SMSF. The other advantage of that is the property market may be less volatile than the share market. But obviously, you must have sufficient cash or funds to be able to purchase real property and use this as your SMSF investment. Now, generally speaking, real property is considered an illiquid asset. What do we mean by that? Basically, what we mean is that it's an asset where it's not easily converted into cash. Let's say, for example, if you want to find quick cash, you can't list your property for sale and expect cash to come to you in 2 weeks' time. But when you're investing in the stock market, in shares or in bonds or in managed funds, if you would like quick cash in order to meet any unexpected obligations, you can sell part of your investment. However, with real property, you cannot sell part of your investment. It has to be sold in one whole. And that's where you need to be able to have sufficient cash in order to pay your short-term obligations. Yes, income will come to you in the form of rental income. However, supposing you've invested in residential or non-residential property and it's tenanted, a third party is occupying that property. Now, there may be times where your tenant is struggling to pay rent, and there may be times where your property is vacant. In that case, your SMSF will bear the outgoings of the property without receiving any rent. So you need to be prepared and do a lot of research in this area. And obviously be prepared that you may experience periods in which your property will not be tenanted, will be vacant, and then in turn your SMSF will need to be paying the outgoings. Now, if you do want real property in your SMSF, you can also look at a loan, which is in the form of a limited recourse borrowing arrangement. That will be discussed in the next episode after we finish all of the different types of investments. Now, real property, again, it's subject to capital gains tax provisions when you hold the property and when you sell it. And obviously, when you hold your property or any assets for more than 12 months, your SMSF is entitled to a 50% discount. And when that happens, the effective capital gains tax rate is 10% and not 15%. Now, the beauty of your SMSF also being in pension mode is any capital gains tax or any interest income or earnings in your SMSF is tax-free. So they're just some advantages of having property and having these assets sitting in your SMSF and then selling them off when the time is right. Now, real property. Any rent income that comes to you obviously is in the form of taxable income. Now, usually the tenant will pay the outgoings of the property, so that the outgoings are going to be very minimal in your SMSF. But usually, if you still want to get a benefit of reduced taxable income, you may also look at getting something what we call a tax depreciation report on your property. Now, you can engage a quantity surveyor to value your property and to have a look and assess how much the building cost is and how much your fixtures and fittings are in your rental property. And then the surveyor will provide you with a report and will provide you with what you can claim in terms of depreciating assets and capital works deductions. So that gives your SMSF a greater deduction in addition to all the other normal deductions and outgoings that you may face. Again, they're just a few things that you can consider when you are investing in property. Now, when you sell off a property, your SMSF will be subject to capital gains tax. So what you need to do is work out your purchase price, basically a purchase price of your property. And you need to also work out stamp duty costs and other transfer costs. So let's give a really quick illustration. Supposing 4 years ago you purchased a property in your SMSF for $300,000. Stamp duty and transfer costs total just over $13,000. Other settlement costs that your SMSF cannot claim a deduction, let's say it amounts to $5,000. Now, in this financial year, your SMSF sold the property for $600,000. So the gain's $300,000, right? Well, not quite. So let's say when you sell the property of $600,000, let's say 3% of the sale price is taken up with agent commissions on sale. Now, this commission on sale percentage usually ranges between 1% and 3% depending on the agent and depending on the nature and type of the property that you're selling. So let's take 3% of $600,000, which comes to $18,000 as commission on sale. Now, let's say again, settlement costs on sale that are not deductible amounts to $5,000. So now you have total sale costs, $23,000, and the total purchase costs, which is stamp duty and transfer costs, are $13,070 plus $5,000, totaling $18,070. Now, add the costs on sale and the purchase and the costs on purchase and settlement gives you a total of $41,070. You add this to your purchase price of $300,000. So that gives you a what we call a reduced cost base of $341,070. Sale price still stays at $600,000. Which means your SMSF has a gain of $258,930. Now, since your SMSF held this property for more than 12 months, effectively the tax on the capital gain is 10%, which is $25,893. How good is that? And that's what you can look at in your SMSF. In a property that will generate you income, that will generate you growth, and in which in turn you only pay 10% tax on the capital gain of that property. So that's just some considerations in real property. Now, the other type of investment that has been in SMSFs over past years is units in a fixed unit trust. Now, usually that's not allowable because sometimes a fixed unit trust is going to be a related party. The only way in which it's allowable to invest in units in a fixed unit trust is if that unit trust owns a commercial property or if it operates a business. and that business is actually a commercial property. So that's the only instance in which your investment in a fixed unit trust is allowable. Otherwise, if you've had that investment pre-August 1999, I think it is, in a related party unit trust, that will be allowable. But anything, any investment you've got after August 1999, you need to make sure that that unit trust owns commercial property or is operating a business from a property. Now, usually the income that will come to your SMSF from a fixed unit trust is a profit distribution, which means depending on your proportion of the units that you have. So let's say a fixed unit trust has 100,000 units and your SMSF has 40,000 units. The profit in the fixed unit trust in this financial year comes out to be $50,000. Now, the distribution that will come to you in your SMSF is 40% of the $50,000. 40% because your total units is 40,000 units in proportion to the total units in the unit trust of 100,000 units. Now, depending on the nature of that unit trust, if it owns commercial property or if it's operating a business, your SMSF can have the opportunity to put more money in that unit trust and then at the end of the day, buy out that unit trust so that it completely owns that unit trust. Now, there are provisions around that, so please see your professional accountant and tax agent for more specific advice. The other type of investments that your SMSF can make is shares in an unlisted public company. Now, you can't have an investment in a private company which is unlisted, but if it's a public company, you can. Now, obviously, you need to know the people behind that public company and they you need to be in a position to approach that particular person. It could be a director or an associate in that unlisted public company. Now, again, that can potentially provide you with a better return each year than what a listed share can provide you or with than what real property can provide you with. But you need to obviously do your due diligence checks on this and do proper research and make sure that this type of investment can tie in with your investment strategy. Now, another type of investment that you can have is collectibles. That can be collectibles, artwork, jewelry. Now, it's not against the law to have that in your SMSF, but please be very wary. Again, you need to do research and due diligence checks on this type of investment. And the other provision is that if you have this type of investment, you can almost be sure that at some point in time, the ATO will likely review your SMSF return and will ask questions as to how you came up with the market value of these assets, especially if it's artwork, especially if it's jewelry. The ATO will ask you, where is it stored? So basically, you must not store it in a place where it's owned by the members of the SMSF or any related party to the member, so a family member or even a relative or a cousin. They cannot, you cannot store this at their premises because if you do, then your SMSF will be in trouble. Now, you need to store it at a place where it's not owned by anyone who's related to you in any way. There are costs in keeping the asset safe and secure that your SMSF will need to pay, but that cost is tax deductible. Now, it's highly recommended each year at the end of June every year, you need to have a market value report done by a registered valuer who's experienced in this type of area. And before investing in this type, you need to do extensive research and be able to determine the authenticity of such type of investments. Now, you can go to a registered person who is highly experienced with collectibles and so on, and they'll be able to tell you whether it's actually authentic or whether it's a fake. So you can engage them. Yes, you'll have to pay money, but that money is generally tax deductible to you. Now, bear in mind, a collectible or artwork has very special capital gains provisions. Now, let's say if you purchase this type of investment for less than $500, the good news is any capital gain or loss is disregarded, so you do not need to declare any of that. However, if you purchased it for more than $500, then any capital gain or loss needs to be declared in your income tax return. Now, suppose you made a capital loss on your collectible or on artwork or jewelry. Usually the capital gains provisions says you cannot offset this capital loss against capital gains of other assets like shares or real property. You can only offset capital losses on collectibles with other capital gains on collectibles or artwork or jewelry. So it's pretty tight, isn't it? But that's a special provision that's centered around capital losses on collectibles. So if you have a $5,000 capital loss from a collectible and you end up getting a $6,000 capital gain from shares and or real property, you're pretty much stuck with the $5,000 loss on your collectible because you cannot offset that against any capital gains from other types of assets. So that's something that you need to bear in mind with that if you are investing in collectibles. Now, the other type of investment that you can have is what we call a mortgage loan. Now, this has also started to become more common in an SMSF where you basically approach a private lender and usually these private companies lend to property developing companies at higher interest rates. Now, if they have the ability for you to invest with them, they can offer you an interest rate somewhere between 6% to 9%, and they make these payments monthly or depending on their policies. That's called a mortgage loan, investing in a mortgage loan with a lender. They in turn invest this money to the property developer who will construct and develop on land. Now, with this type of investment, there is no guarantee of constantly receiving income. It's dependent on a lot of factors. And one of the more common factors is like the borrower being able to make their loan repayments. So you need to do research and also determine whether this is a good type of investment and that it's in line with your investment strategy. So investing in this, the income that will come to you is in the form of interest. And again, that's taxable at your normal SMSF rate, which is 15%. Perhaps one of the last investment types that I'm going to mention very quickly is cryptocurrencies. You would have heard of Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum. That started to grow over a number of years, and there's Bitcoin markets that you can, create an account with and start investing in there. But please be very, very wary. The moment you have these types of investments in your SMSF, you need to declare in the annual tax return that you do have cryptocurrencies. And you need to declare, you need to put in the market value of these of this cryptocurrency. Be very sure that your investment in a cryptocurrency will attract a tax office audit of your SMSF accounts and tax return at some point in time. Now, this is because it's very highly volatile. It's more volatile than the share market. And investing in cryptocurrencies may result in you losing some or all of your capital that you invest in. So please do your research. Again, And again, I will stress out, determine whether it fits in line with your investment strategy. And if it does not, then it's recommended that you stay away from this cryptocurrency investment. It can get quite messy because the market moves a lot. And again, you may lose some or all of your capital. Now, I just want to finish this episode with the idea of an in-house asset. Now, if you have an SMSF, you will have come across the term in-house asset. What is that? Basically, the SIS regulations, it allows, basically an in-house asset is if you lend to or borrow from a member or a related party in your SMSF. So a related party can be a relative of yours or a relative of another member in your super fund. Lending to or borrowing from is considered an in-house asset. Now, the SIS regulations permits an in-house asset, provided that it's less than 5% of the total assets of your SMSF. So an example of an in-house asset is perhaps your SMSF is a shareholder of your own company, which runs a business. Now, if that value remains below 5% of the SMSF total assets, that is fine. But what if the value of your company shares increase? You'll need to do something. You can sell some of the shares of your company or you can make extra contributions to your SMSF in order to make that share or in your private company that runs a business less than 5% of the fund's total assets. But please don't leave this till too late in order to get caught out because that can create problems. Now, even if the value is below 5% of the total assets of your SMSF, your auditor may still like to report that to the ATO in the audit report and in a contravention report. It basically depends on the auditor and it depends on their views and what they consider to be a in-house asset and so on. Now, perhaps, for example, you've accidentally lent money to a family member or, you know, you've accidentally paid bills on behalf of your family member from your SMSF. Now, if that value is below 5% of the total assets of your SMSF, that's fine. We've said generally that's not allowed to happen, but if it's below 5% of your total assets, that's fine. However, you still need to declare that in the tax return that you do have a in-house asset at the end of the financial year, but as long as it's below 5%, that's fine. But please don't use this 5% rule every time that you want to pay private expenses or do any of this sort of thing, because if you get caught out and are seen as doing it deliberately on purpose, then there are heavy penalties that you are going to face. Now, stay tuned for the next segment, the next episode, where we'll discuss at more length borrowing and limited recourse borrowing arrangements and how that can benefit your SMSF. So that's the end of this particular episode of this two-part episode of investing and different types of tax considerations in your SMSF.